there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Breaking news, as much as you love it, you know, and I do too. And that opening is so good with all the Star Trek references. It's the last, dagnammit, the last Advanced Medicine Monday show ever. Dr. Batar, what the heck?
Yeah, I know it's disappointing, but yeah, we've got to, I guess, say goodbye to everybody. This will be our last show.
Yeah, well, we're tired of each other anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, April Fools. All right, we had to throw one in there, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, this is about the most April Fool's excitement that we could get.
I tell you what, we were looking for something to do, and it's just like we couldn't even hold this one that long. But my goodness, Advanced Medicine Monday, traveling around planet Earth, people just anxiously waiting. Somebody emailed me just before the show and said, hey, there's this one show that I can't get to load properly, and I cannot stand to miss even one Advanced Medicine Monday. So there's no way we're stopping here.
Well, Robert, it's funny that you said that because one of the stories we're going to talk about today is about a patient of mine from Australia, and they just came in to get their IV treatments, the first round for their child, but he said something similar, and I just realized by doing this April Fool's joke, it may only make sense to the people from the U.S. From outside the U.S., I don't think April's Fool's Day is universal, is it, or is it?
I don't know, actually. I that's a good question. Maybe let us know if you've got April Fools in Europe, you listen, or April Fools in Australia or wherever. But yeah, every year, the 1st of April is just this day where you prank people. You say silly things. You try to make them believe things. And if people aren't aware of the date, they get totally fooled because you really come in serious with these things. You play it out. A lot of radio shows do this as well. They play a prank on the 1st of April. So if you don't know, that's all it is, and we're just being silly. But no, there's so many people that really anxiously look to start their week with you and I doing Advanced Medicine Monday on the show here.
Yeah, we probably embarrass ourselves because probably more than half the listeners don't know what the heck's going on right now.
Oh well, oops, sorry. Well, here we go. We got to launch in the big story of the week. I touched on it briefly yesterday, and I was able to broadcast from my outdoor studio. I love this. Now I've got two setups. I can run outside, and the weather's nice, and I can go back inside. So we were on outside with Leanna Werner Gray from the Earth Diet last hour. But this is a big story because, and in fact, one of our listeners wrote in and said, "Hey, can you and Dr. Batar cover this?" And, of course, I knew the moment I saw this, it's big time we're going to cover this. And this relates to the new claim in the Journal of Pediatrics that vaccines definitely do not cause autism. But why? How is this possible that they can say that? And the CDC is jumping all over it. And so, obviously, we got to cover it. And this is going to be an ongoing theme this week, Dr. Batar.
This is an interesting study, Robert. The title of it is Increasing Exposure to Antibody-Stimulating Proteins and Polysaccharides in Vaccines is not associated with risk of autism. Now, what this is, just the title of it itself, and as we discuss this off the air, just the title of this study shows how preposterous it is. It's like saying that we have concluded that the trees have no problems, that have no implications to the problem that you're experiencing in the fields, whereas, in fact, nobody said that the trees have any problems on the fields. It's the rocks in the field that create the problems. So they're looking at the trees when nobody's even contesting the trees. It's an issue with the rocks.
Yeah, it's like saying that, well, here is this vial of poison, and we've tested the water that the poison was in. You know, we didn't test the poison, but the water was fine. It didn't cause any problems.
Exactly. That's a perfect way of saying it. They're looking at the wrong premise. One of the things that we've said before is that it's sometimes very difficult for a person to determine what the problem is if they don't even recognize that the rocks under which the problems lie, they don't even see the rocks. How can you discover the truth underneath the rocks that are there when you don't even recognize what a rock is, so you don't even know to turn it over and look underneath it? So this is just an absurd study. I mean, just the title itself. Now, of course, I've read through it. After the title, I went ahead and broke down and said, okay, let me just spend some extra time in useless futility here because just the time itself is preposterous. But,
yeah,
you know, I don't know how much money to spend on the study, but it means nothing. I mean, it's literally, it's toilet paper is worth more than the study.
Yeah, there's a Frank DiStefano, an MD, MPH, Christopher S. Price, and an Eric S. Weintraub. And these guys, I think if they were paid to do the study, it was paid literally to deflect from the reality that, yes, vaccines do indeed trigger these so-called responses in the body and the neurology and elsewhere. And the point is, if you're looking just as they did here as the antigen, we're saying, okay, the antigens in here do not trigger autism. Well, the antigens were there to trigger an antibody response, which is what they'd like to have happen. And it doesn't always happen. That's why they add the adjuvants, the other things in there to stimulate or hyper-stimulate immunity, which are creating scenarios where the neurology is impacted very negatively.
Well, that's exactly correct. And the fact is that the components within the vaccines that cause the denudation of the neurofibrils that eventually lead to the impaired neurological functioning, those things are not what they've studied here, as you said. It's not the proteins or the polysaccharides within the vaccine that elicit that denudation of the neurofibrils. It's the mercury. In fact, it's all the different components within the preservatives have certain implications. For example, lead, we know, reduces IQ, and aluminum has some associations with altered neurological function, but there's nothing that causes the denudation of the neurofibrils like mercury. So when you start looking at mercury, or ethylmercury in this case, which is thimerosal, you know, that's really where the spark is, and that's what starts the fire, and then all these other things will contribute. But to look at one of these contributing components by themselves, it's absolutely without, I mean, there's just no way that you can even look at this and take this seriously, because it has no relevance to the big picture. In fact, it has no relevance even on a specific lower realm, because the polysaccharides, these specific proteins that they're talking about, in and of themselves may not cause any type of response. But when you put them in conjunction with some of these other immune
well, they call them adjuvants, right? The aggravating and irritating adjuvants.
Well, the adjuvants is one component, but as an example, mercury, the thimerosal, is not acting as an adjuvant in the vaccine. It's actually acting as a preservative. So they're not actually using the thimerosal to elicit some type of a response. But the point is well taken, that all these ancillary components, whether they're the adjuvants, whether they're preservatives, whether they're, you know, whatever they are, they're actually immunosuppressive, and that's the point. When you suppress the immune system based upon whatever the other ancillary components are, you have to remember that the entire basis of a vaccine is to elicit an immune response. How can you elicit an immune response if you have an immune suppressive component or components within the vaccine? Now, most of these vaccines are either an attenuated type virus, or they could be, you know, killed virus, but you're adding this substance, this viral component, and then these adjuvants, as you put it, to elicit an immune response so that the body then remembers the exposure the first time. And the theory is that the next time there's an exposure, you don't have to worry about the body building up the antibodies. They're already there, ready, immediately released.
But
and the body can-
Dr. Batar, where would the antibodies be ready and waiting? Would they be in the visceral areas of the body? And I ask that because we know the other aspect of the damage of modern medicine, vaccine, antibiotic, etc., is in the gut, and suddenly the transit of these so-called bad guys into that area of the body where there is no real immune defense, at least initially.
Well, you're absolutely right, Robert. And so the question is, you know, are these antibodies sitting around waiting? Well, there's a threshold, there's a time factor that has to be present for the antigen to be present in order for it to elicit that immune response. And the theory behind the vaccine is that you reduce that time threshold so that the immune system can respond faster and quicker the second time or the third time around. Just like when you get stung by a bee the first time ever, you may have some response. The second time, it's a much more violent response. It's far faster. Or somebody has an allergy to peanuts. The first time, they may have a little problem. The second time, they have a bigger problem. So the whole concept is to jump on this natural phenomenon where the first allergic response. And the vaccine is nothing more than an allergic response. That's what we're trying to elicit. We're trying to elicit an allergic response to something that is not beneficial for the body, theoretically.
Right. Right.
So by giving a little bit of this substance that causes the allergy, the next time the body sees it, it's going to create a bigger allergy response, but it's actually an inflammatory immune response, which is very similar, and it's the same mechanism, and then it's supposed to attack that virus or bacteria, whatever it is that the disease process that we're concerned about, that the vaccine we were given for, is now able to respond faster and quicker to get to abate that disease. That's what theoretically is supposed to happen. But the problem is that the preservatives and some of these adjuvants that you mentioned, some of these other components within the vaccine, they're actually immunosuppressive as opposed to immune enhancing. So if you're giving something that's dependent upon increasing the immune system, how can you go forward if you've got your car in reverse, is my point.
Yeah. It's exactly right. I mean, they do so many things that work incongruently together. They don't work together at all. They work in opposition, that the body is left in a disastrous state of confusion and toxicity.
In fact, Robert, if somebody's really wanting to get their child vaccinated, the most effective way would be to put a child into an environment that has already had there was a population that was susceptible to and already had the process, the disease, but now it's on demand and there's a little bit of exposure so the person's natural immune response can be enhanced and then they can form an immunity. But to add all these other DNA adducts and all these metals and formaldehyde and mutated human cell lines and DNA from other species and these are all things, as you mentioned, these are adjuvants that are added to the vaccines to supposedly enhance them, and they're also preservatives supposedly to allow the vaccine to last for a longer time. All these things are the detrimental aspect.
Yes.
That's really the problem. If you just took pure killed virus or bacteria and introduced into the body, would that work? I think it probably would, but it certainly would not respond if you, it's like I said, going forward in your car, the goal is to go forward and you're putting the car in reverse. You cannot get an immune-enhancing response when you are giving immunosuppressants.
Right. And remember that, some of the things I was trying to indicate were that when you damage the epithelial lining, the barrier between the outside world and the inside world, and now things transit where they shouldn't be, even if you have antibodies to acknowledge, they're not going to be rapid to respond because the normal pathways of interface are violated so grotesquely.
Absolutely. That's absolutely the truth. There are so many things that are being violated. As you said, they're incongruous.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who understands this, even on a rudimentary level, I mean, you can take a junior high student that has studied science, and you can explain this to them, and they will see the flaws in it.
Yeah.
The problem is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, they will get it. Listen, we got to take a break. We'll go into the problem with all of this. We got to continue talking about this study because they're hammering it all over the mainstream toxic, polluted, pharmaceutically conflicted media. That's why we're here on Advanced Medicine Monday to counter that and give you the perspective you need so you can go forward and see indeed what is really happening as opposed to the propaganda out there. So stand by. Lots more healing to go on the Robert Scott Bell Show, Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Bittar.
Who'd you say that masked man was?
It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Robert Scott Bell.
Here I come to save the day.
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Today on Advanced Medicine Monday, we are already dismantling. We've been doing it almost since the beginning. The study claiming autism is not increased. The risk is not increased by early vaccines because, look, we've studied the antigens. Well, none of us had ever said the antigens were responsible for autism. And that is the point of what Dr. Bittar is revealing today, as well as we go further into this, to give you the tools and ammo to counter the people who are going, see, I told you so. Robert Norris and Dr. Bittar, they didn't know.
Well, this is interesting too, Robert. To further that point, this study, as I read through it, it's interesting that after the synopsis of the study, after they go through the objective, the study design results, and the conclusion, the first paragraph before they go into the method of the study, says that the initial concerns that vaccines may cause autism were related to the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and the thimerosal-containing vaccines. In 2004, a comprehensive review by the Institute of Medicine concluded that the evidence favors rejection of possible causal associations between each of these vaccine types and autism. Then they go on to, nonetheless, concerns about a possible link between vaccines and autism persist, with the latest concern centering on the number of vaccines administered to infants and young children. They've completely gone past the entire issue, which is the thimerosal-containing vaccines, by saying that the evidence favors rejection of a possible causal association. And yet, that was where the entire essence of this political agenda that was put out by the pharmaceutical industry, you know, where we talked about Simpson Wood and we talked about all these different things that happened with the mercury aspect. They say that there was no evidence that showed it at first. Now they say that the evidence favors rejection of the possible causal associations, and yet there's data from as far back as 1991. I mean, this is 13 years before 2004, and we're talking about 22 years from now,
yes.
22 years back in history, that we have the actual material safety data sheet from the company that makes thimerosal, which is ethyl mercury, which is an organic form of mercury. Now, if you understand what we're talking about, the second most toxic substance known to man in its elemental form, in its inorganic form, and now you convert it into an organic form so it can assimilate within the human physiology easier. And now it becomes 500 to 1,000 times more toxic and more potent. So you're going from a second most toxic substance known to man into the, you know, by far the most toxic component known to man. And in the material safety data sheet of the manufacturer of the substance, Eli Lilly, as far back as 1991, they state that this substance has been known to cause severe neurological deficits, including but not limited to mental retardation. Now, those studies have been done years, eons ago, and now you're saying that in 2004, the Institute of Medicine concludes that the evidence favors rejection of a possible causal association between these vaccines and autism? For God's sake, look at the crap that you've got in the vaccine that's causing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And now to try to create this study and put this out, this is almost like a bait-and-switch type scenario.
Yeah.
They are creating a distraction on purpose, trying to displace our attention onto something else that has no relevance to the picture at all. Or if it does have any relevance, it's minimal at best. But the greater issue, the much more significant concern, is just being addressed by this one line in the beginning of the study that in 2004, a comprehensive review by the Institute of Medicine concluded that the evidence favors rejection of the possible causation of association between each of these vaccine types and autism. It's just ludicrous. I mean, Dave, this is propaganda, and
totally.
You read that title and the first line of the actual body of the study, it just shows you the essence of this entire propaganda piece.
Well, it is the Institute of Madness, and we know of the pharmaceutical conflicts of interest at the IOM. There's no question about that. And here they are desperately looking for ways to convince those who are on the fence about vaccines. This is not going to change the view of many of our listeners, Dr. Bitar. I'm not at all concerned about that. But those that are on the fence that are going, I'm not sure I am concerned, that's who they're targeting. They're targeting the folks that don't know enough, that are suspicious, but then they can say, ha-ha, look, we have a study to show it's not that. It's safe. It's okay. And as we've covered here, I've even had Dr. Brian Hooker, PhD, and he's dismantled all of the studies that the CDC claims proves that there is no link or connection between thimerosal vaccines and autism. And he shows that, indeed, they show the exact opposite. But by manipulating the way these studies are reported and how some of the data was massaged, that they've convinced the world, not this world, but the other world, that the vaccines are not the culprit when we know full well they are. So they're just playing a desperate game of holding on to those that are still in their grasp.
Robert, and this is a great point that you've made, but in even greater than that is that this, like you said, this PhD, and I'm sorry, his name escaped.
Brian Hooker. Yeah, Dr. Hooker.
Okay, so Dr. Hooker has dismantled each of these studies, but now here's what's even more interesting. When you start looking at somebody on our side of the fence who dissects the study, that's one thing. But when you have, on the other side, scientists that are appointed to do certain studies, and they do the studies, and they themselves, without us dissecting it, without the other side of the fence dissecting it, they themselves, while doing the studies, find that not only is their evidence. It is statistically significant evidence, and it's very, very strong evidence that it is their entire premise by which they started is wrong. It's false. Perfect example is Brubaker. He was hired by the CDC, I believe, or the Institute of Medicine, or the National Institute of Health. I don't remember who it was, but he did a study on monkeys. And in this monkey study, it was supposed to show that thimerosal did not cause autism. But he found that the monkeys that were administered thimerosal-containing vaccines had significant cognitive deterioration. And when he went to present this data, he was basically told that, no, somebody else is going to present the data. And when they did present the data to somebody else, his entire data was skewed and altered.
Yes,
in fact, he was sent off for somewhere else to present to some other group. And yet at the Institute of Medicine presentation, which was his data supposedly, they totally manipulated it. And then there were ethical charges of misconduct brought against, if I remember correctly, against either the body that hired Brubaker, which was either the NIH or the CDC, his supervisors that basically altered the data.
Yes, yes. And
I don't remember all the details, but anybody can. And of course, the mainstream media didn't cover any of this.
No, absolutely not. No.
And just like Simpson was never covered, or any of these things were never covered by mainstream media.
Listen, they are desperately clinging to the hope that they can convince everybody on planet Earth. They know they've lost us, but the everybody else, that the vaccines are their savior. You know, and this is like here we talk about the day after some call Easter or Resurrection Day, and people don't realize if they worship at their church on Sunday, they often worship at the Church of Biological Mysticism Monday through Friday. And that is they're sacrificing their children to this church with the sacrament of vaccination in this case. And it literally is a death cult.
It is absolutely that. And the illusion that's being portrayed is that there's more and more science that is supporting no correlation. And yet the truth is that every single person that has a child that has had this problem, I would say 97 to 98% of the people that have children can specifically delineate the exact day that the symptoms started, and they can tell you that it was 7 days, 9 days, 11 days, whatever, after they got X, Y, and Z vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a casual relationship. It's not a, well, you know, I think it may have been after the vaccine. It is very specific, and they can tell you down to the day of when they start seeing the deterioration. So You cannot say that all these hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people all over the world with children that have suffered are all wrong, and they're all anti-vaccine just because they have to be anti-vaccine. I can tell you that a parent that has a child that's been injured, if it was a pillow, if it was a type of juice, if it was, you know, playing with a certain type of toy, whatever it was, they would be very adamant at singling that one thing out. Why is it that everybody's singling out the vaccines and nothing else? Why aren't they talking about the type of contents in the diaper causing some type of a reaction that has a systemic encephalitis type picture? Or why are they not talking about the type of, you know, bedding or the type of food or some type of formula? They're talking specifically about a vaccine, for God's sake. They're talking about a vaccine that's supposed to prevent them from getting sick.
The parents are. But the mainstream media, as it's reported and owned and controlled by the government, military, medical, industrial complex, continuing with this method it's like a magician. You talked about the distraction. I say the razzle dazzle. It's like the sleight of hand that goes on. Look at the hand over here, and you're not seeing what the hand's doing over there. And in one of the mainstream reports about this paper that was just published in the Journal of Pediatrics, they're saying that scientists believe genetics accounts for 80 to 90% of the risk for developing autism. You know, see how they set the stage that they blame the genes of the parents as opposed to what has been done to trigger the reaction, the response. And you and I, we've discussed this. You acknowledge that there are certain body types and certain bodies that do not methylate mercury as well as others, and that plays a huge role in this. But what is the trigger? I mean, without the mercury coming in, who's going to talk genetics? Why do you even need to?
You're absolutely right, Robert. The genetics are, let's go back for a second, because the point you're bringing up is so crucial for people to understand. So I want to come back and
all right, well, let's take a quick
first.
Yeah, let's take a quick break, because we're at that time, and we're going to come back and go through this again. This is so very important, especially as spotlighted or not, as hidden by the latest study claiming vaccines do not cause autism. So stand by for this and a whole lot more with Dr. Rasha Bitar right here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. It is Advanced Medicine Monday.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. The information is so good, it requires no expiration date. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Okay, Robert, so the important point that I wanted to bring up is, first I want to define autism. Autism is nothing more than mercury toxicity on board a physiology that has a predisposition for the inability to excrete. That's all it is. So let me just say that again so everybody understands. Autism is nothing more than the trigger of mercury, and there are other metals too, but mercury is by far the worst, that this mercury is on board a physiology that has the inability to excrete. That's all it is. That's one reason that our Know Your Options DVD that, Robert, you did the introduction on, on autism, is entitled Autism, the Misdiagnosis of Our Future Generations. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as autism. The word is mercury toxicity. That's all it is. Now, why is it that they talk about the genetics? Because here's the thing. What you just said in the last segment, Robert, before we took a break, is so crucial for people to understand, that trigger that you mentioned, that if you took a child that has autism and you were able to put them in a time capsule and get them back to the point before the physiology was hit by that mercury trigger, whether it was in utero with a maternal amalgam load, whether it was with the vaccine aspect, which, by the way, there's many different ways of getting the mercury, but by far the worst is the first and foremost for children with autism is the vaccine, and the second most is the maternal amalgam load, the maternal mercury load, as well as the inhalation of mercury vapor. So those are the three biggest culprits. If you start talking about methylmercury in the fish, it's just a minute component compared to these other three issues that I mentioned. But if you take that child and you put them in a time capsule and you get them back before the point that they were exposed to the mercury, and you put them in a mercury-free environment, they will not manifest these impaired cognitive components.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's why it's so important to realize that they're the red herring argument. Oh, it's genetics and 80-90%. No, you dunderheads. If you never injected the mercury to begin with, they wouldn't be having this problem.
I like that thunderhead comment. That's exactly right. That's actually a lot nicer way of saying it.
Yes.
But, you know, it's extremely frustrating. And, Robert, I'm actually quite proud of you, because I would have probably said something that would have to been beeped out there, but that's exactly right.
Yes.
The issue is not being addressed. It is being deflected. And as you mentioned, this illusion, the slip of the hand that you were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, that's a beautiful analogy, because it is exactly like this. It's the trying to do a magician trick, and we know that it's an illusion. When you see a magician trick, you know that the coin doesn't disappear. You know that they're doing something to make it look like that. The only problem is, there's an audience looking at a magician. Here is the public looking at the government, looking at the Institute of Medicine, the National Institute of Health, and all these other bodies that were responsible for taking care of our children, responsible for making sure that they were guiding us, and they fell asleep at the wheel, and now it's too much of a liability for them. I mean, I've said this 100 times. If I'd said it once, I've said it 100 times in public, in presentations when I've given in front of the public or in front of doctors, and that is that this significant issue is so volatile that it has the potential of creating the next civil war.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's not enough amount of money that even the Federal Reserve Note could print to compensate the victims of this absolute tragedy with vaccines, and also the American Dental Association, why they continue to stonewall and refuse to admit that the mercury in their amalgams are creating any problems for anybody. And there was a great article John Rappaport wrote, we published up here at the Robert Scott Bell Show website recently, where he talked about the misdiagnosis of autism and Alzheimer's and MS. He says, it's all the same thing. They don't treat the individual. They don't look at the toxicological issue. They give it another name so that they can keep the funds coming for research that never accomplishes anything.
And it's right. It's just an absolute waste of money. And we've talked about this not just in autism, but in everything. Like, there was the moments of duh, as you put it, you know, with the they've concluded after, you know, so many hundreds of thousands of dollars in doing a study that exercise leads to people losing body fat. I mean, like, what kind of research study is that?
Mm-hmm.
They need to do a study as to how do they come up with these ridiculous things to study, and what type of brain deficit do these people have? I mean, you know, have they had have they thrown a clot in their brain and their brain isn't functioning anymore? This is a
logical thing. You exercise, you're going to lose body fat. You know, mm-hmm. you exercise, you're going to lose weight. I mean, mm-hmm. less calories in or expenditure, more calories out. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Why are you spending money to do these type of ludicrous studies that we already intuitively know to be true? Why not take that same money and feed some children?
Yeah. Yeah, feed some children, you know, clean some water.
Teach sustainability, as you've said before. Teach them how to plant a garden or how to, you know, better ways of preparing their own food or whatever. I mean, not to change the subject, but, you know, mm-hmm. 2 days ago, I had my first batch of our homemade cheese from our A2 cow's milk that are fed non-GMO grain that we have to get all the way from Virginia. And, you know, and our cows are totally raised on the ground, or totally organic, nothing else. It was so delicious. And just drinking raw milk myself, which I can legally do because I have the cows myself, and you know, it's A2 milk, which I think it makes a huge difference, and eating this cheese, I mean, in less than a week, with no change in my exercise regimen and no change in any of the dietary intake, I honestly believe that it's helping to decrease body fat. In just 1 week, I can see it. I can feel it. And it's just remarkable, just when you eat the right things, when you, again, we're totally off subject here, I know, but that money could be spent so much more wisely at teaching people these types of concepts rather than going out and doing a study that absolutely has no relevance. I mean, is somebody seriously going to look at a study and say, oh, okay, now that I've seen this study, now I'm going to start exercising?
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't. Yeah.
Now, you're not going to exercise based on that study.
5 minutes ago, there's no way I was going to exercise. Oh, but then I saw that study. Oh, yeah. Okay, now I'm in. I'm in. Sign me up. No, exactly right. It's absurd. But remember, the money is in the medicine. The money's in the disease. The money is in the monopoly. And so that kind of teaching and sustainability of growing your own food means you're going to have healthy individuals that don't need you or your medicine and your vaccines. Now, this is another aspect to when we call them dunderheads. Listen, on another level, the people that are crafting these studies are not stupid. I mean, why would they say, hey, let's just take one little aspect out of the vaccines, the antigens, which we know have really nothing to do with the autism, and ignore everything else, and then we can come up with a study and say, hey, see, we did it. We showed you there's no link. And they created a straw man in this so they can knock the straw man down. That's how it works. So that takes some smarts, but it's a diabolical smarts that they use.
Right, and these are the very higher up echelons. Yes, I agree with you. But the people that did this study, these three doctors that you mentioned that did the study, They're not aware of that. They think that they're doing the right thing. They are truly believe that what they've just put out conclusively shows that autism is not related to the vaccine. But the people that orchestrated the inception of that study and to make it happen, yes, you're absolutely right. They're diabolical. They're geniuses. They're like Hitler.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I would put them on the same realm, if not even worse than Hitler.
Yeah, exactly. And those of you moms and dads out there, before you subject your children to this, pay attention to what we've said here today. And I'm so glad that we were stimulated to cover this issue the way we have this hour with Dr. Bitar on Advanced Medicine Monday. Remember, those of you who are listening the first airing, remember afterwards, it's available through Natural News Radio. We have it linked up in the show notes. Also at medicalrewind.com, it's eventually posted as well. So what we're saying here does not go to waste for those who didn't hear it the first time it airs. The things we say do not expire. They don't go bad. They don't require preservatives, least of all any thimerosal. In fact, we'll help you to remove all of that. So, important consideration.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, important consideration. Listen, let's take a break. Dr. Bitar, let's talk about the future, some positive things coming up, upcoming events, how you can plug into advanced medicine seminars, as well as the AHEAD map that's coming up for you. Perhaps you can participate and benefit economically. I do want to revisit that real quick here. You are listening to Advanced Medicine Monday each week with Dr. Rasha Bitar right here on the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell.
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Upcoming events, including advanced medicine seminars, the Autism One Conference coming up in May in Chicago. I have been invited to speak. I'm lobbying that Dr. Bitar needs to be there as well. He was there many years ago. And I know I'm not asking you permission just to put this out there, Dr. Bitar. I just want to say, for all of you folks that listen to the show, and you know you also go to Autism One, give him a call, send him a message, say you'd like to hear Dr. Rasha Bittar there as well. Maybe we can get him up there, because the things you would present, even more so than all the years prior, all the experiences you've had, many children coming to you after they've been to 10 other doctors, if not 20, to finally get the results they're looking for.
Well, Robert, you know, the autism one, when I did go there, it was twice I went there. I was asked to go 2 years in a row, and then the political scandal started with the medical board and their lies, and, you know, it took us 3.5-4 years to beat all that down and, yeah, and come out unscathed. But damage and propaganda that was done, because they have the hundreds of millions of dollars and the resources, the quackbusters and the, yeah, you know, the Federation of State Medical Board, et cetera, et cetera. We know the whole story. But the point is that when I was there the last time, there was a crowd after I finished speaking for 14 hours from 11 o'clock. I finished my lecture at 11 and till 11 in the morning. And at 1 o'clock that morning, I still had a crowd of 100 people around me. They had to put us into a different room.
Oh my God!
For 14 hours, it was just ridiculous. But you know, it's all based upon the results too. And you know, the thing that I wanted to tell you about that I mentioned off the air that I wanted to talk about, it was one of my patients from Australia that actually is a big listener of our show, a very avid listener of our show too. And you remember I mentioned to you, I said that one of the guys was talking about A2A2 milk and said that he heard us say about blah, blah, blah on the new website. He went to the website and he was reading it. He noticed that at a certain point, the content literally said blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Before
it was populated with real sentences. Yes.
Exactly. And so this is the same patient, or he's actually not the patient. His son's the patient. They were referred to me by another patient from Australia who happens to be a physician herself, but they came in to start their treatments. And so they were told the same thing as everybody's told. Don't be surprised if there's worsening before there's improvement. It's always that Hochheimer's type of response that we've talked about in the show before.
Yes.
It's a healing crisis. It's a mobilization of the substances that aren't supposed to be in the body. And as they come out, you may see some worsening in symptomology before the improvement comes out. Well, or before the improvement makes itself evident. So he's told the same thing. You know, don't be surprised if the child sprouts two tails and one horn, even that unusual. So, you know, I always put it that way to make it even more extreme so that people understand, yes, for a child to sprout a tail and two horns, that would be very abnormal. But if they get one horn and two tails, that's even more abnormal, and it's normal. Don't worry about it. That's what it's supposed to be. So anyway, they start their treatment, and the father, now this is their exit office visit. This is their last visit. The next day, they're getting ready to leave. This was this past Thursday.
Okay.
And he says to me, he says, Dr. Tarr, I just want to let you know. And he's getting emotional. You can see the tears welling up in his eyes. He said, for the first 2 weeks, it was just, he said, I was ready to tear my hair out. There was just no way that I could see our life continuing like this, because he was just so off the wall, and you know, this was telling me all the different things, and it was just difficult. And he was talking to his wife on the phone back in Australia, and his first name is Frank. The father's first name is Frank, and so he says that all these things were happening, and then it was like exactly at 2 weeks and 3 days that something changed. It just totally like a light switch went on, and then over the next 5 days or so, there was steady improvement, and then the last week of his treatment, they were there for 5 weeks. The last week of his treatment, he said it was so incredibly enjoyable. He said he was actually looking forward to his son being with him, and his son was looking forward to being with him, with his father. He didn't have to worry about anymore where the child would not recognize the father before the child would just run off and, you know, dad would call him and, you know, child would be oblivious if he got separated from his father. And now the father said that there was recognition. If he didn't see his father, he would panic. He started looking around for his father. His dad calls him, the child comes right back. And there's better communication, to the point that he had a conversation with his wife back in Australia, and the wife is talking out to their child and said something about coming back home. And the child said he wanted to stay in America. He was having a good time with his dad. And the husband, Frank, says, I could tell that it upset my wife. He said that she was really upset because here is, you know, her son getting better and is enjoying time with his, she was like jealous almost.
Right, right. It's like the relationship that she would want that he was getting now, and a son that was coming to life.
Right, and not to say that the mom was upset about it from that point, but, the, you know, the dad said that you could see that she was upset about it, but his eyes are welling up with tears, and he said, I just can't even express to you in words
you know, what this means and how it's going to affect our lives. And it made me realize something that, I mean, this is what keeps me going. When people say, what makes you keep on going? What makes you keep on fighting the, you know, the boards and doing this? It's that one thing that person says. And I had the same thing happen earlier in the week on Wednesday with another child. And, you know, I mean, I'm very, very fortunate and blessed because I had this experience 2, 3, 4 times in a week. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago the child from Ireland.
Yes,
and
yes.
What happened with him. Now, you know, it made me realize something, and I'm going to share this with you, Robert, on the air, because emotionally, you know, when it comes to an ego, I have a huge ego.
We've joked about that, yes.
Right. Well, but here's the thing. Since the medical board's fight, this last fight, you know, I used to speak 50 to 70 times a year. I mean, one out of every 3 or 4 weekends, I was lecturing twice in 2 different cities. I would fly to some city, lecture, get on a plane, and then fly to the next city and give a lecture before coming back home during the weekend. So, I mean, I was lecturing extensively. Since the medical board thing happened, this last big 3.5-year fight, a lot of organizations didn't want to have me speak anymore because they were worried. They were scared. You know, what if there's any truth to it? This, that, the other. And I've never called any of these organizations. I mean, I could care less.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot of that came from ego.
Right,
and
right.
When Frank said this, and when I had two of these children back-to-back, and there was word, I don't remember the exact wordage, but there was wordage to the point that other people need to know this. And they're saying, the parents are saying to me, you know, we're not going to forget. We're going to keep on going out there, and we're going to let the world know because this is important. People need to know this. People need to have the hope. People need to know that not only is it just a possibility, it is a high probability and, in fact, almost a certainty that if you do these treatments, the child will get better. It doesn't matter where you go. It doesn't matter who does it. As long as somebody that knows what they're doing, it's the fact that the treatment works. And it doesn't work sometimes. It doesn't work usually. It works almost every single time. And the only reason it doesn't work is because there may be some type of an impairment within the physiology where we're not getting to the metals, to the mercury, or to the persistent organic pollutants that are causing the major component of that problem. Meaning that everybody's DNA is different. Everybody is biologically individual. Everybody's genetically unique. And so there may be some uniqueness in there that's preventing us from getting the mercury completely out of the system. But, you know, as he's saying this, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I haven't contacted any of these organizations, and I won't. I mean, to me, it's not off me to contact them. If they want me to speak, they'll contact me. But I realized that that's my ego speaking, and
yeah.
So I did reach out. And recently, just...
Well, and you know that's that point, you set it aside. As you said, we've talked about the ego, and when it comes to the help and care of your patients and these kids, you say it, you're ego-less. It isn't about you. But there's other parts of the ego that allow you to drive through, like the board and other things, that have served you well. And we utilize these tools, including our egos, for those, hopefully for the benefit of others, as opposed to just the ingratiation of ourselves. But now, you got to get back on the circuit. I mean, you just can't be hanging out with Robert Scott Bell all the time.
Well, I do like hanging out with Robert Scott Bell, and actually I appreciate you saying that because, you know, I you tend to forget. You always think of things in black or white or good and bad, and so
mm-hmm.
You're right. That ego has served me well, and I appreciate you recognizing that and bringing that up. But, you know, as we've discussed before too, Robert, all is as is meant to be, and all shall happen as it was meant to be. And I am a great, great believer in the universal consciousness and how everything is timed to the perfectness of,
mm-hmm.
you know, utopia. There's no way that we could ever time things better had we had control than the way the universal consciousness, the way the creator times everything. So I do have infinite patience when I think about the creator and I, you know, think about which direction we as a society, global society, are moving. And all I can say is that I appreciate Frank, who's listening to us in Australia, and
yes.
To, you know, to the other patients that I've just mentioned, to everybody, and especially I appreciate being on the radio with you once a week, because when we started this almost 2 years and a couple months ago, almost 2.5 years ago, I really had never even contemplated that we would have a reach like we have a reach now.
Yeah, it just didn't end around all of the old ways to go about it that were untenable without, you know, trillions of dollars. I know, exaggerate slightly, But the idea was to reach beyond the media's limitation and suppression of information. And we're doing it. And as evidence, as I said, the global reach, like you said. Now, real quick, we only got a minute to go. So I didn't mean we'd go this way, but it's so important that you related what you did. Upcoming events, real quick, what can we tell everybody to look forward to?
Well, the head map is coming. It's incredible where that's going. But the other thing, tying it right back to autism, part of what we didn't talk about is the RAP-TD, which is the questionnaire that we have with our patients for autism, which we've got data points all the way back to 2000. And what I haven't mentioned is, and if anybody's listening and they want to know more about this treatment, contact our office, or to have your doctor contact our office, because they can now access the same treatment protocols all through the associations that we talked about, completely well within the constitutional rights of each one of those doctors, whoever they are. Anybody who has a physician can access the association and get that specific treatment, which is by prescription only. So we are opening that up, and we've been trying to figure out how to do that in a way that's safe for the doctors and for the patients. And, you know, we have to deal with the regulatory bodies, but if we do it in the way through the associations, and using our constitutional rights, we have the ability to do that and extend it to everybody on the planet.
Yep.
I'm really excited about that.
Getting out of the public domain into the private. We've talked about it before. Go back and listen to some previous Advanced Medicine Mondays as well. And sign up for email alerts at robertscottbell.com. We give you the access code for free. Of course, doctors setting it up, it costs something, but it's greatly reduced because you heard about it through this show. And check it out, robertscottbell.com, medicalrewind.com. Don't forget the international bestseller, The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. Dr. Pitar, we're out of time. But that just means it's time for us to remind each and every one of you that the power to heal is yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.